So the ultrasound machine was rolled in, and he said, I don't know how to tell you this, but there's no heartbeat. And there was a silent scream that came out of my mouth in learning that I had lost a second child.
Welcome back to A Fresh Story. This episode is part of a special series for October, as it is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. We are honored to hold space for these profound conversations and share these stories. These stories may be of grief, but they are also of hope, resilience, and most of all, unconditional love. As a reminder, be gentle with your heart. And if you are not able to listen to this episode at the moment, we understand and we're holding you close. These conversations will change you as they have changed us. I'll let these amazing women tell you in their own words. Anna Burgess Yang is a freelance content marketer and journalist in the suburbs of Chicago. I met Anna on Twitter, and then she was on the first season of A Fresh Story. We had an awesome conversation talking about her major career shifts. When I was doing the show notes for that episode, I noticed that she had not mentioned a major part of her personal journey. You see, Anna is a loss mom. She lived through the unthinkable losses of her daughter Nell in 2015 and Iris in 2016. Anna has since gone on to write beautiful and heartbreakingly raw pieces about her daughters, her grief, and her relationship to loss, as well as a lot of advocacy work to help other lost parents feel less alone. I invited Anna back on the podcast to talk about losing her daughters and how we can support people who are experiencing this loss. And Anna did come back, and we talked. I know you will be changed forever by her words, as I was. I'll let Anna explain a little bit more.
So in 2015, I was pregnant for the third time. My first two pregnancies were the definition of normal. And during my mid-pregnancy ultrasound, it was determined that my daughter had a growth restriction for an unknown reason. She was measuring way too small for how far along I was in pregnancy. I was over halfway by that point. And I went through a battery of tests. Everything was normal, genetic, viruses, totally fine. So I was kind of awaiting the next step and trying to diagnose what the problem was. I was at a routine appointment with my OBGYN. And I found out during that appointment that my daughter had no heartbeat. And of everything that I'd gone through in my head about what the outcome could have been, that hadn't even crossed my mind. And I think what's not often talked about is what happens when you lose a baby more than halfway through your pregnancy. I was admitted to the hospital. Labor had to be induced. It lasted 26 hours. Just like it would for a full-term baby. I had an epidural. I had medication to move things along. But I wasn't a normal patient. I was in the labor and delivery ward, but I was there for a very different reason. And at one point, the nurse told me that delivery could happen so fast that there might not even be a doctor in the room at the time. And I begged that nurse not to leave me alone, and she sat and held my hand when my daughter, Nell, was born. And I can't even explain what it's like to leave a hospital without your child, having given birth to your child, and then knowing that you need to leave that child behind. One of the doctors even said to me as she was discharging me, and I knew this doctor, I'd been in their group practice for a long time. She said, well, you have two other boys at home. Go snuggle with them. But I, one child doesn't replace another child. And that was such a slap, you know, as I was leaving the hospital. So I went through more testing and everything was fine. And so the doctors told me there's no reason that you can't try again right away. And I did become pregnant shortly again thereafter. And at my 16-week appointment with my OBGYN, I said, you know, I'd prefer you to use an ultrasound machine, which they don't typically use at that point in pregnancy. I said, I had a really bad experience before. I just want to make sure that we see the heartbeat, see it right away, not use the little Doppler that's usually used to find it. And he said, okay, he understood. So the ultrasound machine was rolled in and he said, I don't know how to tell you this, but there's no heartbeat. And there was a silent scream that came out of my mouth in learning that I had lost a second child just not even a year after the first. I had to go through the same process again. I had to go through labor and delivery a second time and still had no answers for what happened. If losing one child was enough, you know, losing two, it broke me. And on the advice of talking to doctors and still really trying to decide, like I had two healthy living children. I had two children that I lost. What do I do? Do I try to bring a third child into this world or do I just say this isn't going to happen for me, especially with no explanation? A very wise doctor told me to wait, give my body a time to rest, think about it. We did eventually try again, and I have a beautiful rainbow baby, a baby that's born after a storm of loss, and her name is Autumn, and she's now 6 years old. But going through that, this losing Nell was in 2015, losing Iris was in 2016, even 8 years later, this is still something I talk about a lot because I was so alone. I thought, nobody else can possibly know the pain that I'm going through, but it's because women don't talk about it. It's still such a taboo topic. And so I've realized that there are so many people out there holding this pain in and so many people who just absolutely don't know what to say. And so that's why it's really important to me to talk about this.
I asked Anna to describe a little bit more about the support that she received in the days after she lost her girls and in the weeks after. And what does it look like to just keep going? I also wanted her thoughts on what work leave looks like after this kind of a loss.
When Nell died, I mean, I had to go to the hospital immediately. And I did have local people that I was able to contact that said, I need you to go pick up my child from the bus. It's going to be, you know, and things like that. And then my parents flew in from out of state to help. When Iris died, by coincidence, my brother and his fiance happened to be flying in that weekend anyway for just a normal visit. And I told them, I'm like, I would really appreciate you if you would still come and just provide support for us for a few days. But one thing I talk about a lot is that work leave that's provided to women who are going through this is so different than what's provided to a woman who has a living child. You know, I went through labor and delivery and I don't even know what type of bereavement would have been available to me because I worked for a very understanding company that gave me a few weeks off. I've heard from other people, they get 3 days off and they have to go. A friend of mine had a C-section because she was about 35 weeks pregnant. She had a C-section and had to go back to work because she didn't have a baby. And so the support is often very minimal for women that are experiencing such a loss. And even miscarriages that happen earlier can be very traumatic for the body. As your body's kind of processing what's happening, it can be severe cramping, bleeding, things like that. And women are just expected to just show up back at work.
As Anna and I were chatting, I wanted to know more. In fact, I wanted to know everything. I wanted to know, What is it like to leave the hospital without your child? Not once, but twice. How do you explain this loss to your other children? What is pregnancy after loss like? And how do you hold out hope that everything will just be okay? And how does Anna honor her daughters? How does she spend time with them? And what does she say when people ask her how many children she has? And why do we talk about our living children, but we don't talk about our children who have passed? I wanted Anna to give me answers on everything. And as the journalist she is, Anna did.
It was devastating. The hospital gave me a box of mementos, you know, that had been put together. I couldn't open it. I did later. It had like a little tiny knit hat that somebody had made. Somebody made a bracelet and left it in there. I was very lucky. I didn't realize how lucky until much later. But my local hospital has an excellent support system and resources for women that have experienced loss. And so one of the nurses had taken footprints and had done little footprints, and those were in the box. And those are like, if my house were on fire, I'd be leaving with those footprints because those are literally all I have. But leaving, you know, I was wheeled out of the hospital. I was wheeled out of a labor and delivery ward and just drove home with my husband without our child. So my two older sons were, I think, 6 and 4 when Nell died. So it was hard because, you know, at that age, they're not super, they super aware. So, you know, we had to have a conversation with them that we were going to have a baby. They knew. And now we're not anymore. And kind of just said, you know, the baby got sick and we don't really know what happened. Because we've done these things over and over for years, they know, you know, that you know, we get a cake every year on Nell's birthday and Iris's birthday. We're just like, oh, it's their birthday. We're going to get a cake. So even though they're, you know, middle school now, you know, it's still part of their life. And I also, I have a family photo from when Autumn was born. She was maybe 4 months old. And a friend of mine, who's an artist, drew in some silhouettes of Nell and Iris. And so they look like they're about, you know, 3 or 4, which they would have been around that time. And that is one of my, like, most treasured things. It's in our family living room. And when my older son was in 2nd grade and he had to bring in a family photo for a school project, that's the picture he chose. That's what he took to his classroom. And I sent the teacher a little note and I said, this is what this is. And I'm not sure what he's going to say about it, but I want you to be aware that that's what this photo represents. So I think for them, my older two in particular, it's part of their lives. For Autumn, it's a little different because she's 6, you know, so she's kind of that age that they were when they kind of didn't quite grasp what's going on. And it's in my mind that I'm going to have that discussion with her as she gets older, that she came after, you know, that we kept going, you know, we kept trying and she's here. And that's something I really struggle with. And I know other parents struggle with also, is she wouldn't exist if we hadn't lost the other two. And that is so hard to grapple with, you know, and I have other friends that have felt the same way, you know, the way, you know, they became pregnant within a time frame or whatever, that they know that their rainbow baby wouldn't be here if they hadn't lost a child. And it's so hard because you know that one child is not a replacement for another child. But, you know, that rainbow is that hope and that wanting to continue. And I also wholeheartedly respect and know women who say, especially if multiple losses, I can't do this again. And that's, I've talked to women about that before and say, you know, you have to draw that line in the sand for yourself and know what you can handle. And I had said, if that 3rd pregnancy had been a loss, I was done. I could not do it again. That was going to be my breaking point. I got lucky, whatever. But I kind of said out to myself, I know what I can handle and what I can't. And it was okay for me to say, that's going to be enough. So with my pregnancy with Autumn, I was incredibly detached. Because I everybody says it was a fluke. We couldn't find anything wrong. It just happened. And then it happened again with still no explanation. And so I went to, you know, my hospital had a support group. I went to a support group specifically for parents expecting a child after loss, and talked about, you know, with these other moms, that what they were feeling and what they were going through. And I said, I don't feel anything. I can't get attached to this baby. I don't know if I'm going to be bringing her home, even as the weeks, you know, even as I got to third trimester and I was closely monitored by doctors and did everything. I still could not believe that I was going to bring a baby home. And a friend of mine said, you know, you're allowed to feel joy. And I said, I can't. And she said, then we're going to hold joy for you. And I said that to a friend recently. I said, you don't have to feel joy. I'll do that. I'll hold that hope for you. And that was a really important thing that somebody said to me, that it was okay. Give me permission to not feel okay. And in my support group, I think, or maybe it was after, but the other thing that came across was, I can love her for the rest of her lifetime. She's not going to be harmed at all by me being detached from my pregnancy. There's, you know, she'll be fine. She'll never know that I had that feeling while I was pregnant, because I can love her forever after she's born. But yes, it does totally mess with your worldview, with you think this can't happen to me. It can't happen again. Even though it is so common, but we just don't talk about it. Well, one thing I'll say before I dive into honoring them is, it is a difficult thing to say, to answer the question, how many children do you have? I remember very distinctly, I think after Nell and Iris had died, I might have been pregnant with Autumn, I can't quite remember, but I was at Trader Joe's, and somebody saw I was pregnant and said, well, how many children do you have? And what do you say? And what do you say in a way that honors what you know and says, you know, like, isn't an entire explanation to the person in the checkout line in Trader Joe's? Like, what is the right thing? And I really struggled with that for a long time. And I don't have the right answer other than that you have to say whatever is true for you. And also that not everybody deserves your story. You can say whatever is true for you in that moment and that situation. It doesn't dishonor the children that you don't hold, and you can still honor them in other ways. So I'll leave that there, that is such a difficult question. I honor Nell and Iris all the time. Even when I was pregnant with Autumn, I began speaking on panels at our local hospital. It was an opportunity that was given to me. I speak to medical staff, mostly nurses, labor and delivery techs, sometimes even intake people, about how do you provide care to a patient that is on your floor that is not taking their baby home. And the perinatal bereavement coordinator who handles all of this, she's amazing. She has said in those group sessions before I start speaking and before the other panelists start speaking, this is your most important patient. Because those other women, no matter how much pain they're in, they're going home with a baby. They're not going to care about that pain after. This person is your priority and should absolutely have all of your as much attention as you can give them. They're not secondary to the women who are taking a live baby home. So I've done that. I usually do that several times per year talking on those panels. I talk very openly on LinkedIn as a platform that I write on a lot, and try to call out things like lack of support for parents, lack of bereavement leave, things like it's hard for me to work on Nell's birthday because it's her birthday and I don't get to have that with her. My support group also does things like an annual walk every year. We have more than 1,000 people in our area. Sadly, the number keeps growing every year. There's more people, but now there are people that have been doing this for 10 years and they still show up to honor their child. You know, we light a candle on Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Day in October. There's an International Bereaved Parents Day, Mother's Day, day before Mother's Day in the U.S. So there's all kinds of little things that I do. And I look at it as, you know, for my living children, I would go to, you know, my son's cross-country meet or my son's choir performance. And these are things that I do. They're on my calendar, just like my living children have things on my calendar. I'm never going to forget that my child died, that my child isn't here. And it means more to me than anything when people continue to reach out and say, happy birthday, Nell. Happy birthday, Iris. And things like that. So you're never going to make them sad. I guarantee you they are already thinking about their child that day, whatever day it is. And not only that, it's not just the thoughts, but I've chosen to put things in my home, you know, that remind me of them, whether it's artwork or something like that. I have a tattoo. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. So no, I can't ever forget that this happened. It's something I'm always going to carry with me. You're just not the same person that you were before. You know, there's a distinct before and after. You know, I still to this day have difficulty going into my OBGYN's office. I know women that have changed practices because they just can't. They can't be back in that room where they heard that news or anything, where they had a bad experience with their doctor, things like that. And those are all very valid things. I didn't change practices. I liked the doctors, so I went back. But, you know, I just kind of tense up in that office, you know. Your body remembers. So you keep, you know, I have to keep going. And there's a therapist named Megan Devine. She runs a website called Refuge in Grief. Her partner drowned at the age of 39, very unexpectedly. So she's a licensed therapist. And so she was shocked at how ill-prepared many therapists are at dealing with grief. And so she kind of created this community to talk very openly about it. But one thing she says is some things cannot be fixed. They can only be carried. And people try to fix grief. And maybe even, you know, if you're going through it, maybe you think, I have to fix this some way. I have to make this better. I have to get past this. I have to move on from this. And that's not true. You're going to carry it with you. You know, if it's something that's recent, if it's something that happened a year ago, you're going to keep carrying it. And that's okay. That's okay. It's okay to not be okay for a period of time. But yes, it is possible to keep moving, as I like to say. You don't move on necessarily, but you just keep moving. You just have to find how you can continue to honor your child in a way that makes sense for you, in a way that preserves whatever memories you have, whether it was, you know, if it was an early pregnancy loss, maybe it was that memory of that first pregnancy test. You know, maybe you did get to hear a heartbeat at some point. So it's that memory. You know, there's so many things you can do to carry that with you and to keep remembering that you were a parent. It doesn't take much. And if you think about living children, you know, people think about them all the time. Their teachers, their friends, whatever. I text the parents of my friends. I'm like, oh, this is going on with one of my kids. So there's constant conversation about your living children. I don't know why we have to feel like there can't be conversation about the children that aren't here. Because like I said, I guarantee you that that parent is thinking about that child all the time. So it's just another way to kind of keep their memory alive.
I asked Anna to share what she wants the world to know about losing your child, and how we can actually support our friends and family members who are experiencing this loss, especially those things we shouldn't say and what we should say?
I think mostly for the rest of the world is to be more understanding. I think there's just a lot of, if you haven't gone through it, you really just have no idea. There's a lot of things in life that are like that. And pregnancy loss is one of them. And you can't necessarily know what that person is going through unless you've been through it yourself. And people do process pregnancy loss in different ways, and that's fine too. But I think there really is a lack of empathy around pregnancy loss, mostly because it isn't talked about. You know, we expect grandparents to die to some extent. We expect our parents to die eventually. But a child loss and an infant loss is kind of an out of order. So it makes people feel really uncomfortable. And people say the worst things to, you know, they say, well, at least you got pregnant. Well, you can have another child. When are you going to try again? Those things just should not be said to parents. Like, well, in general, it's a private decision. Your baby's in heaven now is another one that I've heard. Like, somehow that's okay, an okay outcome. And so there are just a lot of really flippant comments or people trying to minimize the pain. And it just can't happen. And so things to say would be, like I mentioned, how are you doing today? Or I'm here with you. Is there anything you need? Rather than trying to make light or trying to gloss over or saying, well, it was just pregnancy. You know, it's not a full-blown baby. It's your child. Just be quiet or say, don't know what to say. I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry. That's totally okay to say that I don't know how you feel. That's fine. Something that the leader of my support group has said is the loss of a child at any gestational age is the loss of a dream. For many women, parents, not just women, men too, the minute you get that positive pregnancy test, you're thinking about everything in the future. You might be picking out wall colors in your head. You might buy clothes early, you know, things like that. There's so many things. And so the law, you may think, oh, I'd love for my child to, you know, take a ballet class someday or something, you know, or I hope that they do this. So the loss of a child, it doesn't matter the gestational age, is the loss of a dream. I think that's what people don't get and why they say things like, well, you can have another child, something like that. And it's like, well, no, I wanted that one. I wanted that child. That was my child too. And so I think that's really an important thing for people to keep in mind is that no matter the gestational age, the minute you get that test, you're a parent. You start thinking ahead. And that was just taken away from you. I have a fellow lost parent, so it's a little different, but she says things like, I saw two butterflies at Target today, and it made me think of your two girls. Amazing. Because that's another way that they continue to be remembered. A little different, but I'll give this example. So I had a friend of mine who was in the camp of, I don't know what to say. So in kind of those first months, she just kept sending me pictures of exotic birds with she's like, here's a pretty bird I found online. And I knew she was doing that because she said, like, at the first time, she's like, I don't know what to say, so here's a bird. And then she just kept sending me birds. And so every time it would just make me smile. And she did it for the longest time, just randomly, I'd get a picture of a bird. And so I think, you know, there's ways, you know, whether it's in the early days or even years later, to just say, hey, I saw something that made me think of you. Another one of my friends who lost her son, they always think of pennies because of the Frank Sinatra song, Pennies from Heaven. So people send her pictures of pennies if they see them on the ground. They say, oh, Jonathan was talking to me. So I think that that's totally appropriate and just, it's amazing.
I wanted to know what Anna would say to somebody who is currently experiencing this type of loss. And here's what she had to say.
One is that you're not alone. I absolutely felt like I was alone, and I thought nobody else could understand the pain of what I was going through, and that it wasn't true. And there's a whole community of women out there who have been through this pain and who know what you're going through, and they may not be talking about it openly, but they know. And it took me a year to go to my first support group meeting. I go through SHARE, which is a national program that has local affiliates. It's for pregnancy and infant loss. And it was through that group that I knew that I found that I wasn't alone. So one, finding some support, whether it's online or in person or anything like that, even if you just listen and can't. I remember in my first meeting, I couldn't even get the words out. Like, you know, we went around, they said, do you want to share your story? And it was, I could barely get through it, even a year later. The other thing I'll say is our society is very good at telling you that you need to move on, and you don't. Grief is absolutely, there's no timeline for it. You should not feel like you need to be over it at any particular time. It's different for everybody. And you have to give yourself permission to feel whatever you feel. I still have days now, years later, that are just terrible because something will make me think, you know, first day of school, well, Nell would be in, you know, second grade. Something like that. But I will say that it won't always be as raw as it is in the beginning. And sometimes there's guilt in that. Sometimes there's guilt in not feeling devastated all day because your baby died. And I remember feeling that hurt, like, oh, today was kind of an okay day. Today was maybe a good day. But is that not honoring my child that now I feel okay? And so, but as time passes, you can feel different things. And it won't always be this like incredibly dark place, but don't let anybody tell you how long that period of time should last.
Thank you, Anna, for sharing your story with us. And thank you for sharing Nell and Iris with us. We will remember them always. We have linked Anna's writing and resources in the show notes and the blog post for this episode. A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry. A heartfelt thank you to all of the women who shared their stories in this special series. And a special thank you to Alex Mooney, who has been our special consultant for these episodes. If you are experiencing pregnancy or infant loss, we hope that these episodes helped you feel a little bit less alone. We love you, and we are holding you close.